Okay, my name is John Burbridge, and some of you might be aware that I have a great interest in Jackie Robinson's first game in Jersey City when he was in the Montreal Royals. Okay, that's better, right? Although once I called a bingo game without a mic. Okay, so my interest in Jackie Robinson went from Jersey City that first game. What happened the rest of 1946? So that led to the topic today, Jackie Robinson comes to Baltimore. Now, most of us are aware that in August of 1945, Branch Rickey and Jackie Robinson came to an agreement that he would play for the Dodger organization and break the color barrier. They actually tried to keep it hush-hush for a while, but in October of 1945, Robinson signed a contract to play for the Montreal Royals in the 1946 season. Now, Montreal was the top farm team of the Brooklyn Dodgers, and he played in the International League. And the other teams in the International League, another Canadian team, the Toronto Maple Leafs, three teams in upstate New York, Rochester Red Wings, Syracuse Chiefs, and the Buffalo Bisons, two teams in northern New Jersey, the Jersey City Giants and the Newark Bears, and one team below the Mason-Dixon line, the Baltimore Orioles. Now, the season began with a four-city road trip, and they were going to Jersey City, Newark, Syracuse, and then finishing up in Baltimore. At least the schedulers in the International League knew not to play in Montreal in April, okay? So you had a four-game road trip. And, of course, after that very stressful spring training, opening day occurred in Jersey City, April 18th, 1946. And at that time, Jersey City had a mayor, Frank Haig, who was a real boss, and he sold 52,000 tickets for a stadium that only held 25,000. So there was a lot of standing room and a lot of no shows, but they were on the city payroll anyway, so they had to buy a ticket. Robinson was magnificent. He went 4-for-5, 3-run home run, stole 2 bases, he induced 2 balks, and Montreal won 14-1. So the opening game was a rousing success. But there were storm clouds on the horizon, not Newark, the next city on their road trip, but Syracuse. Syracuse provided a rude awakening, a merciful heckling from some fans, but mainly from the Syracuse players. The players, one player, and maybe it didn't happen in this first series, but sometime during the season, he pushed a black cat toward Jackie, shouting, "There's your cousin clowning on the field." And they were merciful, the players. Now, Jackie remembered those visits as his worst experience, but claimed it didn't bother him. I don't necessarily buy that. Now, why were the Syracuse players? Well, first, of course, there were some Southerners and even Northerners who were racist. And so they were. But there was another thing that cropped up, and that was they were worried that with the influx with Robinson and the future influx of Negro League players, their livelihood would be jeopardized. It was already jeopardized by all the folks coming back from the war. So you had that issue also that caused a lot of players figuring if they could somehow get Robinson to end this great experiment, their livelihood might be preserved. I want to go this way. Okay, now we go to Baltimore, from Syracuse on to Baltimore. And Baltimore in 1946 was a southern city. It practiced segregation in just about everything, housing, education, dining, and other public venues. There was a slow movement integrating some of these. There was something called the Hollander Awards, which promoted integration and gave out awards. Now, in 1946, the Baltimore Sun wins one of those awards, and they win it because they're not going to put race in the headlines of the newspapers anymore. So that's, as I said, slow moving. Frank Shaughnessy was the president of the International League, and he was concerned. He was getting messages back that Baltimore was going to be a very hostile environment. So he, at that first game in Jersey City, he meets with Ricky, and he implores Ricky not to take Jackie and another African-American who's playing for the Royals, John Wright, to Baltimore. He's saying, there's going to be bloodshed and possible riots if they play in Baltimore. But Ricky denies that request. He thinks Shaughnessy is probably exaggerating his claims. And the second thing is, he knows Jackie's going to have to play in such hostile environments. So why not face it in Baltimore? Let's talk a little bit about how the media anticipated Jackie's first arrival. The Baltimore Sun, it depended upon whether their readership was primarily white or black. So the big newspapers in the city were the Sun, the News American, and the News Post. The Baltimore Sun had a little story about that opening series, and they referred to Robinson as the Negro star at second. The News Post gave more play to another Robinson, Eddie Robinson, who was the star of the Baltimore Orioles team, later became the MVP, beating out Jackie Robinson for the International League MVP. But Eddie went on to have a great major league career, and an executive, I think primarily with Atlanta, and he just passed away at the age of 100. But the News Post did devote a paragraph to Jackie, as that he was the highly publicized colored second baseman. The Evening Sun described Jackie as the Negro who is pioneering the cause of his race in baseball. Now, it was quite different to Baltimore Afro-American. Their readership was primarily the black community, and interesting enough, ever since spring training, they've been giving a lot of press to Robinson. And guess who they put in bold in the International League standings? Montreal, not Baltimore, okay? And the headline on the sports page, fans await Jackie Robinson's initial appearance. And they call the upcoming games a history-making experience. Now, well-known sports editor for the Afro-American was Sam Lacy. And in his column, he called Jackie's first game a modern Emancipation Day. The first visit was April 27th through the 29th. Now, the first game was a Saturday night game, and it was very cold. It was frigid. And that kept the crowd down. There were only 3,415 people there at the game. Jackie said it was playing like Alaska. I don't know if you ever played in Alaska, but somebody did tell me maybe UCLA took a trip up there. But it was while it was very small, it was very abusive. A lot of heckling. And Rachel Robinson, Jackie's wife, was sitting behind the Montreal dugout, and she heard the N-word within all of that heckling. Now, Rachel that night, she wondered whether or not this was all worth it. Jackie playing in the face of all this abuse, and she cried. The Orioles won that game 12-7. Jackie went 1-for-3 in a stolen base, and John Wright pitched that game, and he was a lot of heckling dedicated at him. And he wrapped up the game, pitched 2 2/3 innings of shutout ball. The next day was quite different. It warmed up. It was a doubleheader. And there were 25,306 fans that included an estimated 10,000 blacks. By the way, let me say something about my picture there. That's not what, in those days, municipal stadium looked like. Those of you who took the ballparks tour yesterday recognized that this was, at that time, almost like a football field, and it wasn't, these stands weren't built until Major League Baseball came to Baltimore in 1954. At that doubleheader, the heckling continued. But you had 10,000 blacks cheering Jackie on, and possibly Rachel was relieved when she heard all of that cheering for Jackie. The team split the doubleheader. Jackie went 1-for-7, but he committed a very costly error in the nightcap. He dropped a throw in the fifth inning, letting a lot of Oriole runs score, and the Orioles won the nightcap 6-3. The following night, the final game of the series, Montreal won 10-0, and Jackie went 3-for-3. So you could see that this first visit was somewhat of a success. Yes, there was the abuse of heckling, but you had a significant number of black fans out there at the stadium cheering Jackie on. And Robinson actually went 5-for-13 with one stolen base. Now, interesting enough, though, the primary newspapers in town, they dedicated more press to some of his shortcomings rather than what they saw as a positive. Show you how the press handled this kind of situation. Now, Jackie went back, the team went back to Montreal for their opening day and a long homestand. And during that homestand, Jackie pulls a calf muscle, pretty significant strain on his calf. And he misses a lot of games at the end of May. And the first game in Baltimore in June, he's also missing. So he missed games at the beginning of June and misses the game the June 6th open. This is the second visit of the Royals to Baltimore. The Royals played, Jackie plays the second game. And the Royals win 5-4. Now let me just go through the end of that game. The Orioles have men on first and third. On third, Jim Honacek, who was playing for the Orioles in 1946, he's on third base. Ground ball to the infield. Throw goes to the Royals catcher, Herman Franks. He puts the tag on Honacek, and according to the Baltimore Sun, it was applied with some gusto. Whips the throw down to second base and gets the runner on first. A double play which ends the game. Well, Honacek and Franks get into a little scuffle. And they're joined by some players, and guess what? Fans storm the field to get involved in the fray. Now, the wrath of the fans quickly turns not to Herman Franks, but to Jackie Robinson. And Robinson and a lot of Montreal players had already reached the clubhouse, and the fans also go out to the clubhouse and start ranting and raving. And what could be heard? Here's something. Come out here, Robinson, USOB. And they stay around that clubhouse for a couple of hours. And most of the Montreal players, coaches, and their manager, Clay Hopper, they leave, go back to their accommodations. But three players stay with Jackie. Marv Rackley and Tommy Tatum, who are Southerners, and Spider Jorgensen, some of you remember Spider from his Dodger days, and they stay with Robinson until the crowd dispersed. And that was a little about like 1 o'clock in the morning. And that's when Jackie and his teammates leave the clubhouse. I believe they escort him on a city bus down to wherever Robinson was staying. Obviously, he needs different accommodations because Baltimore is a segregated city, and the press basically said he was staying with relatives. Now, Jackie doesn't play in the following night. The Royals win that game 10-6. Supposedly, it's due to his calf muscle, but I wonder if any of the events from the previous night created the problem that he didn't play on the following game. Okay, so Montreal heads back, goes to Newark on their road trip, and eventually gets back to Montreal. Now, Montreal's got a great team. Their 1946 is one of the better teams ever in the history of minor leagues. And they lengthened their lead into the International League pennant. And it isn't until the end of July that Montreal comes back to Baltimore once again. And the first game of that series is July 26th. And Robinson has a great game. Robinson has a great game. He goes 3-for-5 with a home run and a steal of home. Montreal blows an 8-0 lead, but manages to win the game 10-9. Guess what? The game ends with another disputed play at home plate, and guess what? The fans storm the field again. According to the Baltimore Afro-American, though, the wrath of the fans was not at Robinson. It was not racial. They were after, and the Afro-American says it, they were after that white umpire, Gus Winters. Now, whether or not the tension of having Robinson play contributed to that, but at least the Afro-American did not say it was racial in nature. The Orioles win the second game of that series, 6-5, and Jackie goes 1-for-5. And they split a Sunday doubleheader. Robinson goes 1-for-6. Now, let's kind of review the hostile environment that Robinson was subjected to in 1946. Sam Racy in the Afro-American says that throughout every one of those games, there was just abusive heckling from the white crowd. So one of the prime contributors to that heckling was Tommy Thompson. Tommy was the Orioles manager. And can you imagine if you got your manager heckling, obviously the rest of the team is heckling also. So you had probably a significant abuse coming from the dugout in Baltimore during all of those games. Spider Jorgensen commented that every game and all of the visits to Baltimore were really, there was considerable tension, and the players felt that. Now, Robinson endured and performed well under such conditions. Let's talk about the remainder of the 1946 season. The Royals dominated the International League, won playoffs against the Syracuse Chiefs and the Newark Bears, and beat the Louisville Colonels. And, of course, Louisville being a southern city, there was a lot of abusive heckling when they played in Louisville. But they beat Louisville 4 out of 6, and win the Little World Series, which is the American Association team against the International League. Louisville's in the American Association. Robinson's stats, kind of amazing. 349 batting average. Now, here's something. 468 on-base percentage. Jackie walked a lot. 113 runs, 3 home runs, and 40 stolen bases. Now, in the Montreal press, as the season progressed, they used a lot of adjectives associated with his color at the beginning of the season. At the end of the season, they were just talking about his performance. The stress caught up with Jackie. And in August, Rachel and the Montreal brass say, "Hey, Jackie, you're getting close to, you know, are you possibly having a nervous breakdown? Are you really suffering that badly? So let's go to the doctor." So the doctor prescribes 10 days of rest for Jackie. Jackie stays out maybe 3 days and maybe just one day, but he's back with the team, and he says, "I don't want to let my teammates down." I found a little blurb in the Afro-American I found interesting. Jackie announced he was not going to go back to school after the 1947 season. Now, I couldn't find anything which announced that he was possibly thinking of going back to school, but I found this, that he was not going to go back to school after the 1947 season. Possibly, and this was about the same time as he went to this physician and was told to take some time off. So maybe Rachel and Jackie got together and said, "Hey, you know, maybe we end this great experiment and our obligation to Branch Rickey after the 47 season." But Robinson says, "No, he's not going back to school. He's got little Jackie on the way." Conclusions. 1946 was very stressful, and I hope you kind of got that feeling from his trips to Baltimore and also Syracuse. I think it may have been even more stressful than what he was subjected to when he reached the major leagues in 1947. At least that's my thesis, that 1946 was a more stressful season for Jackie. Given the above, I just also want to mention Rachel Robinson, that whole season, she was pregnant. So it had to be extremely stressful for Rachel. Given the above, Robinson still dazzled and proved he should be in Brooklyn in 1947. Jackie's presence had a significant effect on the National League attendance. No matter what town they visited, attendance was up. Not just black fans, but also white fans. Frank Shaughnessy was correct in worrying about the reaction in Baltimore, as a near riot occurred in Jackie's second visit, and possibly even in a third visit. The season proved successful, as Jackie clearly validated Ricky's decision, selecting him, not Satchel Paige, not Josh Gibson, not Larry Doby, not Monty Irvin, to break the color barrier. Now, let me just touch on my sources. The Baltimore Sun and the Baltimore African-American, I got through the Enoch Pratt Library. Then you had the two biographies. I especially want to call your attention to Jules Teigel and Kostya Kennedy's back biographies. They devote considerable amount of time to 1946. Teigel's got a whole chapter. And in Kostya Kennedy's, he treats Robinson through four seasons, and one of the seasons being 46. And then there's a website which kind of goes series by series, the whole 1946 season, giving you a lot of information. I got a minute or two. Let me go back to a sidebar. Jim Hanacek, and tie him into this conference, a convention. As I said, Hanacek was on third base, got into the scuffle with Herman Franks. He quits mid-season, and he goes to one of the lower minor leagues and becomes an umpire. And he actually umpired in 1947 and 1948 in the International League, and then made it into the American League in 1949. And he retired in 1973. But what's he known more for? We got Boog Powell here tomorrow, and Hanacek and Boog Powell were in those light beer commercials in the late 70s. Anybody remember that? By the way, Hanacek graduated from my wife's alma mater, Allentown Central Catholic. He's a Lehigh Valley boy. So that's a little sidebar on Jim Hanacek. Thank you very much. Questions or comments? Use the mic. I'm a little bit hearing impaired, so make sure you speak up, and my son's going to help me if he can't hear it.
Okay, John, was the seating at the ballpark in Baltimore segregated?
Excuse me?
Was the seating segregated?
Yeah. David, how? What's that? 1946, it wasn't segregated? Okay, it wasn't. Rachel sat behind the dugout, and I know for the game she was at. I had thought it was segregated. I don't know, yeah. But it's an amazing stat, 468. And it leads to how many runs he scored, 113. Because he missed a lot of games because of that calf injury. He missed a lot of games because of that calf injury. Any other questions or comments? Bruce? Well, you know, the remnants of segregation don't go away overnight, okay? And that ill feeling is something. And, yeah, Robinson had, I think it's documented, where looking for housing in Baltimore became very, very. Pete Mancuso just told me a story before my presentation about Staten Island Yankees, a team that came down here in 1949 with three black players. And the owner hid them in his hotel room. 2 o'clock in the morning, the police knocked on the door, arrested the owner, and the players had to sleep in the taxi cabs that took them down from Staten Island. I got that story right, Pete?
Wow.
Yeah. So, you know, things changed slowly. There were black players, African-American players, though, on the 1954 St. Louis Browns team. There were a couple who came from St. Louis.
Do you know where the clubhouse was at Memorial Stadium at that time? Was it like down the left field line or out in center field? I
didn't quite get that.
Where the clubhouse was.
Oh, the clubhouse was in center field.
It was.
In the old, at that time it's called Municipal Stadium. It was still mainly a football field. And from what I've read, the clubhouse, they had gone out to center field and were in the clubhouses, and that's where the mob went after Robinson had eventually reached the clubhouse.
Thank you.
Question?
Okay.
Thank you. Okay. Well, thank you very much.